own. Maybe this isn't such a good idea, I said as I eyed the growing crowd. Any plans that I had had about keeping a low profile shot right out the window when Torrance stood up on his seat, cupped his hands to his mouth, and shouted my arrival to the town. Matilda stared at me with stars in her eyes, and the brothers stood beside me like conquering kings as they shouldered against each other to be seen better. Torrance gave a flourish of his frilly wrist and bowed low.
Good people of Hampstead, I present to you Ken Jewel.
What's the racket all about outside my door?
The thick, raspy voice of an old woman called out. She sounded like she drank whiskey all the time and smoked 3 packs a day. I glanced at the door to the hut and watched as the old witch shuffled out of the place with the help of a gnarled and knotted cane. She wore a brown patchwork cloak, and on her right shoulder sat a frazzled-looking black cat. On closer inspection, I realized that the thing was dead, stuffed, and pinned to a robe. Her nose was long and hooked at the end, and 2 beady green eyes, partially lost to saggy, wrinkled skin, scanned the crowd. When she spotted me, she froze, and her eyes grew about 3 sizes bigger.
You,
she said, and pointed at me with a long, crooked finger. Her fingernails were so long that they curled up under themselves.
Hi, I offered. You must be Gran Helga.
The crowd began to murmur again when they heard my voice, and whispers about my accent didn't miss my ears.
I am Gran Helga,
the witch said with a flourish of her robed arms, but then she let out a groan of pain, put her hand on the small of her back, and took a slow step forward.
But who are you?
I'm, Ken.
Ken who?
She sounded like a creepy owl, and I tried not to let on just how nervous the old hag made me.
Just Ken, I told her.
She grinned at me devilishly and reached up to take my chin in her long fingers. Her fingers smelled like hummus and ass, and I held my breath and glanced at Torrance. He offered me a reassuring nod.
Torrance has found a diamond in the rough. Or should I say, a jewel?
She leaned in when she spoke, and I nearly gagged. Her breath smelled like she'd been chewing on cat turds. I laughed nervously and tried to remind myself that Torrance had just introduced me to the crowd a few minutes ago, so she hadn't really used any magical powers to guess who I was. She murmured at me and turned my head left and right. As my noggin swiveled on my neck, I caught a glimpse of the crowd who practically held their breath in anticipation.
Gran Helga, Lady of Mystic Knowledge, Torrance said as he bowed before her. I have brought this man to you so that you might determine what powers he has.
I know why you have brought him here, you oafish fool.
She scowled at him and turned her attention back to me.
Come, and I will read your stars.
I offered Torrance a pensive frown, but he continued to encourage me with his animated expressions. Gran Helga waved her hand and beckoned me to follow, so I let out a pent-up sigh and walked into the little hut.
Put your pack down and sit on the other side of the fire.
She instructed and proceeded to gather an armload of ingredients from the many shelves about the place. I sat down on a cushion by the fire that burned at the center of the hut and surveyed the confined space in 2 heartbeats. The hut was perhaps 12 feet wide and circular. It had a stone half-wall and a domed wooden frame covered with thatch. There were several open windows that gave the villagers a clear view of the inside of the hut, and they crowded the windows so they could watch silently. The light revealed stacks of leather-bound books haphazardly stacked against the wall to my left. Behind me I saw a small cot, and to my right the wall consisted entirely of shelves littered with jars full of strange, many-colored liquids, some with pig's heads, human hands, dead snakes, or trapped spiders inside, along with dozens of other sticky unnameables. The place smelled like cat piss and old lady diapers. Gran Helga had gathered all her ingredients and spread them on a small table to her right. She then sat down across from me with many grumbles, groans, and general elderly protests. Once she had settled in, she turned her soul-searching gaze upon me once again. The look she gave me made my pecker want to retract into my sack like a turtle head, and I tried to relax. I'd had my fortune read before. Granted, it hadn't been in front of 100 mystified villagers on another planet, and there were no real witches back on Earth that I knew of, but the villagers sure seemed to believe in the old hag's abilities, so I guessed that she could probably do what they said she could do.
"You have come very, very far, haven't you, Sergeant?"
Gran Helga asked. "You can say that again," I said, and tried to remember if Torrance had told everyone my rank.
"Why, are you hard of hearing?"
she inquired. "What? No, it's a figure of speech. Never mind. Hey, how long is this going to take?" The crowd who watched through the windows and the door gave a collective gasp, and I guessed that I had broken some rule of etiquette. But the witch didn't seem to mind. She smirked at me and gave a small laugh that turned into a smoker's cough, or a tuberculosis cough, one of the two. "My friend told me that you witches can create portals," I said, and watched her closely for a reaction. "Can you help me get back to my world?"
"First, I read your stars,"
she told me.
"Now be quiet and let me focus on my work."
She proceeded to take her sweet time tossing ingredients into the simmering cauldron between us. In went a rabbit's foot, a bullhorn, two dehydrated toad carcasses, a pinch of salt, a hint of garlic, and something that might have been thyme. The list went on and on. I had started to get bored with the little show about 2 seconds after I sat down, and by the time she waddled her ass over to pluck out a few brown hairs from my scalp, my patience was wearing thin. Gran Helga tossed my hair in the fire, and to my surprise, a small explosion rocked the hut, and multicolored smoke filled the tight quarters. "Jesus, lady, you trying to kill me?" I asked as I waved the smoke out of my face. She stood over the boiling cauldron, completely oblivious to my protests, while the crowd leaned into the windows with their breaths collectively held. I found myself on the edge of my seat cushion, and I realized I was holding my breath.
"You have not one magic power, but two."
The crowd was shocked. Some onlookers' jaws dropped like young men laying their eyes on their first set of tits, and others stared wide-eyed, completely entranced as Gran Helga leaned down more into the swirling cauldron. I peeked into the pot as well, but the concoction looked like funky soup to me. It smelled like old gym socks, spearmint bubblegum, if that was possible, and there was a hint of sulfur somewhere in the rancid banquet of aromas.
"Your first power,"
she took her sweet time, no doubt trying to work the crowd. The old bat was a showwoman for sure, and a good one at that. I wondered how much money she made selling snake oils and cures for limp dick on the side. Her eyes suddenly widened, and she looked at me horrified.
"Your first power is the ability to bond with monsters."
The crowd reeled back. Someone fell back out of a window. A woman cried out, no doubt clutching at her pearls. Men protested angrily, and children began to cry.
"And?"
Gran Helga bellowed, silencing everyone.
"Not only can you bond with them, your first power can also bring them up to the surface world. Into the sunlight."
I heard the women in the crowd start to sob, but before I could look at them, the witch let out a moan of terror.
"That isn't all."
Gran Helga clutched at her chest.
"Your second power is even more horrible. It is...
She began hyperventilating, and I reached out to steady her when she suddenly collapsed like someone had hit her in the head with a baseball bat. I managed to catch her before her face smacked into the side of the table, and then I set her down on the floor and reached to check her for a pulse.
and that's when the villagers went apeshit.
"He killed her!" a man cried out. "No, I was only trying to—"
"She said that he could bond with monsters," a woman reminded them all. "And bring them to the surface," another woman screeched.
"Into the daylight," a man bellowed. "Get him! Get the monster-loving bastard!"
The villagers were pretty worked up, so I guided the old witch down to the dirt floor gently, sprang to my feet, and rushed to the door. A pair of burly men blocked my way, but I was a pretty big dude myself, and I shouldered into them both with the power of my 6'3", 200-pound frame, combined with the momentum of my 70-pound molly pack. We crashed through the threshold and spilled out onto the cobblestone street. I rolled, leapt to my feet, and spun a circle to get my bearings. I was surrounded. Some villagers looked terrified of me, but others slowly closed in, more than 100 in all. They had begun to gather whatever weapons they could find and slowly started to stalk toward me with pitchforks, shovels, axes, and even brooms.
"Everybody calm down," I yelled, but they kept on coming.
Torrance and his family watched from the wagon that seemed to float on a sea of pissed-off villagers. The old fisherman looked crestfallen and couldn't meet my gaze. Matilda held her hand over her mouth as tears spilled down her cheeks. Maximus's bottom lip quivered as he watched me back up cautiously from the crowd, and his brother yelled at the villagers to leave me alone. But his voice was barely audible above the chorus of dissent.
"Get that monster lover! Hang him high! Burn him at the stake! Cut off his balls!"
I glanced at the castration enthusiast who appeared to be a barber. He held a big pair of shears and snapped them open and closed as he and the others moved closer. One man got a little too close with the skinning knife that he carried, and I smacked the blade out of his grip with my hand before pushing him back. I might as well have kicked a hornet's nest because the crowd began to buzz more angrily than ever.
"All right, everybody fucking freeze!"
I screamed as I pulled my sidearm, spun a circle, and trained the gun on the crowd. They stopped, eyed the gun with confusion, and then kept on coming.
"Freeze!"
I warned, but like a gang of medieval zombies, they shambled towards me, so I aimed the pistol in the air and pulled the trigger. The shot rang out like a snare drum rim shot, and the townspeople collectively paused to look at my hand. For half a second, it seemed like they were a bit confused, and I thought my sheriff trying to restore order routine might have worked. But then they all turned their eyes away from my pistol, started to scream again, and closed in on me like the angry mob they were. I charged through the crowd like a linebacker and slammed into the biggest guy I could see. He wasn't a fighter like me, so he hadn't been ready. The blow sent him careening into three other people, and the four of them fell in a tangle of flailing limbs. I leapt over them, landed among the villagers, and proceeded to introduce them to the concept of a mosh pit. Then I danced through the crowd, bobbed, weaved, and shoulder-slammed the men who got too close. Someone tried to hit me on the shoulder with a shovel, but I turned my back so my pack took the hit. Someone else tried to stab me with a kitchen knife, but I smacked the weapon out of their grip before they could get me. I took a few punches on the chest and one to the side of my face, but I finally broke through the mob. Then I ran as fast as I could for the bridge that would take me back in the direction I had come. I wasn't going to try to retreat to Torrance's house, since I had already caused him enough trouble. I was just trying to get some space between me and the pitchforks. Behind me, the crowd of angry villagers were in an uproar. A bell began to toll, and I imagined the cavalry charging out of the distant castle. I urged my legs to run faster and ran through the village. Men with pitchforks and torches poured out of every street. Brawlers with clubs fashioned from broken chair legs emerged from every pub, and cooks charged out of eateries wielding butcher knives and rolling pins. I ducked and dodged the groping hands and impromptu weapons and hauled ass to the bridge. Luckily, no one was coming from the other side of town, so I ran across the bridge without having to fight anyone else. I was in prime shape, but I was also used to lugging around a lot of weight. If I didn't put an end to the chase soon, I would run out of steam and be overwhelmed by the maniacal villagers. To make matters worse, the baying of what sounded like a dozen hounds issued from a barn nearby.
"Go get 'em, Blue!"
a man yelled, and the dogs shot out of the barn and headed straight toward me. I was a dead man. There was no way I could outrun the dogs. I might have been able to shoot them, but I wouldn't be able to put them all down before one of them ripped out my throat. They closed in fast, and I frantically searched for a way out of this predicament. Then I spotted the wagon sitting beside a cottage, and I sprinted in that direction. The dogs were on my heels by the time I reached the wagon, but I jumped on the wheel, stepped up atop the wagon, and lifted myself up onto the thatch roof of the nearest cottage before they could bite me. Three more cottages and a barn lined up beside the one I was on, and so I raced across the rooftops. I finally stopped on the roof of a large barn and considered my next move. A quick glance around showed me the screaming villagers in hot pursuit, more dogs, and a squadron of knights riding across the bridge. I'd been in tight spots before, and I had always gotten out alive, but I was beginning to think that my luck had just run out. Then I saw a horse being led out of the barn below me, and my mind drifted back to those old Western movies where people leapt from rooftops and landed on saddles before riding off into the sunset. But this wasn't a movie, and this horse wasn't wearing a saddle. I imagined the intense pain that would fill my balls if I landed on the horse from this height, so I slid down the side of the roof instead. "I'm going to need that horse, friend," I told the man with the horse after I had landed next to him. He stared at me wide-eyed and slowly handed me the horse's reins. I was about to tell him to go piss off, but then I realized that I probably couldn't get up onto the horse's back with my heavy molly pack. "Help me up. Move, move, move," I ordered with my best drill sergeant voice. The squat little man rushed over and, to my surprise, dropped down on all fours so that I could use him as a stool. I would have laughed if an entire town wasn't trying to kill me, but the man seemed more afraid than I was, and a moment later I was stepping on his back so I could climb up on the horse. The animal didn't like me on its back, but I didn't much care what it liked at that moment. I snapped the reins and kicked the sides, and after a few seconds it finally complied. We rocketed down the street, hooked a left, and headed for the old road leading out of the village. Behind me, the dogs bayed and howled with anguish, and a look back revealed at least 24 men on horses in hot pursuit. I had only ridden a horse a handful of times, and I had always done so on a saddle. Riding bareback was way more challenging, and I knew that I had no chance of outrunning the riders who pursued me. As I exited the village and rode toward the forest of pine, I tried to figure out a way to evade the men. With the dogs on my trail, it was useless to try to hide, and I knew nothing about the land, so trying to lose them in their own backyard was out of the question. Then I thought of the one place that everyone here seemed to be afraid of. The Underdark. I remembered Torrance pointing out one of the boarded-up caves that supposedly led to the Underdark. I had a good memory for such things and knew the spot to be about half a mile down the road. All I had to do was get there in one piece. When I reached the spot, I leapt off the horse and raced over to the blocked-off entrance. Whoever had barricaded up the cave did a half-assed job, and I easily tore down the shoddily constructed planks and started throwing the stones aside. As I worked, the ground shook with the thunder of 24 horses, and a horn blared from what sounded like less than 100 yards away. They were getting close, so I kept ripping at the wood.
"Hey, you, stop!"
I heard a voice cry, but the wood was almost down, so I didn't bother to turn around.
"Get him before he escapes!"
Someone else yelled from behind me.
"Shoot him!"
another voice shouted, but then the cave was open, and I leapt through the hole I'd made and tumbled over the stones piled in the entrance. A second after I'd made it inside, an arrow whizzed right by my head and twanged off the stone wall. I ducked down behind a rock and gave a glance at the entrance. The group of townspeople were there with their dogs, but the animals whined at the entrance and didn't seem to want to enter. I scrambled to the back of the cave to get out of the range of the bowmen and turned on my flashlight. My heart hammered in my chest, and the adrenaline left me a little shaky. I was glad to have escaped the mob, but now I was faced with the dreaded Underdark. I tried to tell myself that the people were superstitious, that there were no monsters down here, but the dogs didn't even want to venture into these dark haunts, and that left me more than a little spooked. Were there really monsters living in the caves of this strange world? It was time to find out. Chapter 3. I moved deeper into the cave and pulled my M17 from its holster.
The dogs were still howling back at the entrance, and the men offered up curses and threats, but they were all too scared to follow after me. I was safe, for the moment. My flashlight revealed rough rock walls and a smooth floor that descended into darkness. I had only two options, either stay near the entrance and wait out the angry villagers, or else delve into the mysterious Underdark. I figured that the villagers would post lookouts near the entrance, or else board the cave up again, and that ruled out ever going back that way. As the adrenaline from the chase began to wear off, I started to get groggy. It had been one hell of a day, and I would have liked nothing more than to lay down and sleep for a week, but I pushed back those feelings and let my military instincts take over. I had all the gear in my pack memorized, every soldier did, but I wanted to calm my nerves a bit, so I decided this was a good time to take an inventory of my supplies. Then I moved a bit deeper in the cave until I couldn't hear the sound of the dogs and villagers before taking my pack off. I pulled my Kevlar advanced combat helmet out of the molly pack and set it aside, along with my collapsible spade, gas mask, and six MREs. The waterproof bag inside my pack contained the extra pair of camo pants, t-shirt, patrol cap, and wool socks that I had worn during dinner, along with black gloves, a poncho liner, an extra pair of combat boots, a polypro top for cold weather, waterproof matches, winter gloves, and a fleece cap. In my map pocket was another pair of socks, camouflage paint sticks, insect repellent, a razor, soap, and a towel. There was also a protractor, map markers, and a calculator. I checked my right side sustainment pouch and confirmed the presence of another pair of socks, chem lights, a wet weather top, and a poncho. The left side sustainment pouch held rappel gloves, 15 feet of sling rope, a 500-foot-long 550 cord, numerous carabiners, electrical tape, and a roll of 100 MPH tape. Aside from my gun, my pistol belt held an ammo pouch with two fresh magazines for my M17, two camelbacks currently full, a lensatic compass, a first aid kit, and a survival kit. I opened the two-sided survival kit. On one side it held a finger ring saw that would come in handy if I needed to cut firewood, and a snare wire that I could snag small animals with if need be. There was also a candle, plastic bag, survival blanket, and a fishing kit that could also be used to procure food. The other side contained a pocket knife, a signaling mirror, a whistle, a smoke chaser compass, and a magnesium fire starter. All of it was useful, and I was suddenly thankful that the army made me carry the heavy backpack. My first aid pouch, perhaps the most valuable of my gear, held a medic card and Sharpie used to log treatments performed in the field, along with a Bolin chest seal that would usually be used to treat gunshot wounds, but would come in handy if I was hit by an arrow or sword. The kit also contained my cat tourniquet, gloves, gauze, an eye shield, hemorrhage control bandages, a strap cutter, and a nasopharyngeal airway tube. There were empty pouches inside for soldiers to add other supplies, and I had always elected to include Quick Clot, a bottle of Aleve, another of ibuprofen, and extra gauze. Satisfied with my inventory, I shouldered my molly pack once more. I had already known everything in my pack by heart, but the act of taking inventory had helped to calm my nerves, and my mind was now focused on planning my next steps. If I had been on Earth behind enemy lines, my first step would be to determine a route back to safety, but I had no idea how or if I could get back. My next step would be to secure a defensible location so that I could rest if need be, so I set out to map the surrounding area. The cave I was in narrowed into a tunnel that continued downward for maybe 100 feet. I could see a soft glow in the distance, so I clicked off my flashlight and approached cautiously with my M17 in my hand. The glow emanated from an opening to the right, and I crept to the threshold and peeked around the corner. A cavern nearly as long and wide as a football field opened before me, and I took a quick survey of my surroundings. Stalagmites, more than 50 feet tall, grew out of the uneven cavern floor, and reached desperately toward dripping stalactites emerging from the ceiling. A soft blue glow issued from long crystal formations that jutted out from the floor at odd angles. Some rose more than 20 feet high. They pulsed softly, and I wondered what their power source was. The villagers obviously believed in magic, and though I really hadn't seen proof of it yet, the humming crystals made me second-guess my beliefs. Hell, I was on another planet, and it seemed that I needed to be prepared for anything. Mushrooms littered the large cavern as well, and grew not only beneath the crystals on the floor, but also along the walls and even the ceiling. The scent of frogs and moss mingled with fungus in the stale air, but there was another smell. It was faint, but it was easily recognizable as an animal. The scent was a cross between wet dog and camel, and I listened for a good minute for any sign of the mysterious beasts. The cavern was dead silent, except for the steady trickle of water that came from the other side of the cavern and the occasional drip from the stalactites. I couldn't see any tunnels leading off from the main chamber due to the tall crystals that blocked my view, so I entered the cavern and moved to the right. I picked a path close to the wall so I wouldn't get lost in the forest of crystals and stalagmites. There was strange writing on the walls that reminded me of ancient runes, and crude artwork that depicted hairy little beasts subduing a giant snake. I didn't like the idea of running into hairy creatures or giant snakes, so I kept my eyes peeled and continued my way around the chamber. There were small cracks in the craggy walls and places where rodents might have hidden, but no tunnels large enough to accommodate me. The sound of crashing water became louder as I moved to the other end of the cavern, and soon I found the source. The waterfall was 20 feet high, but it only trickled over the rim, falling through the floor to a pit of darkness. The rim of the pit looked unstable, and I could see where large chunks had crumbled off over time, so I kept a wide berth around it and moved between the crystals. The hairs on my arms rose up and gravitated toward the towering crystal formations, and I dared touch the smooth surface of one of them. A zap, like static electricity, hit my finger, and I jerked my hand back. Then I prepared myself for the shock and touched the crystal again. The weird gem definitely had a low-voltage electrical current, and I wondered if they could be used to charge my flashlight batteries. I had to continue searching for a way back to the Earth, but I also had to consider the possibility that I would never be able to go back, and if so, such crystals might come in handy. I moved through the glowing crystals and edged around a wide stalagmite. When I came out on the left side of the waterfall, I continued around that side of the cavern back to where I had started. There seemed to be only two ways in and out of the cavern, the cave I came in through, and the lip that the small waterfall poured over. It had been large enough to accommodate me, but I had no idea where it led, if anywhere at all. Unfortunately, it was my only option. So I made my way across the cavern once again. This time I walked through the middle and searched the crystal formations and stalagmites for holes or hidden tunnel entrances. The cave art and the stink of animals suggested that something lived in here, but my search proved fruitless. It wasn't until I inspected the waterfall closer that I discovered another tunnel behind it. I should have felt excited by the find, and I would have been, were it not for the bones that littered the entrance. I approached carefully, M17 held out in front of me in my right hand, and flashlight ready in my left. With a quick peek around the corner, I discovered no glowing crystals, only darkness. If something was waiting to ambush me inside the tunnel, my flashlight would give me away, but I figured my scent already had, so I turned on my light. The tunnel was full of bones, but most shocking of all was the 30-foot-long snake skin coiled on the right side, nestled among the skeletons. I almost shit myself when I mistook it for a living snake, and I took a moment to let the shock pass and focused on keeping my breathing even. I shone my light down the tunnel, but it revealed only more bones. The eyeless skeleton of a man stared back at me as I inspected the den. Most of the bones appeared to have belonged to small animals and a few birds. Aside from the lone human skeleton, however, there were other large creatures that I couldn't place. One looked like a cross between a dog and a bull. Its body was 4 feet long, and protruding from its skull were 2 6-inch-long horns. Another skeleton was similar to a human's, but rather than 2 arms, it had 4, and they looked like they must have hung down to the creature's knees when it was alive.
I found other bipedal skeletons as well, and several strange skulls. But the den didn't smell like death, and I figured that the snake must have moved on some time ago. It was time for me to do the same. I tried not to crunch the bones on the floor, and kind of slid my feet through them to cause as little noise as possible. The den soon led to a fork that offered three choices. One went to the right, another continued straight ahead, and the last would bring me to the left. I checked my compass, but the damned thing spun around aimlessly, and I figured the strange electric crystals or the iron in the walls were messing it up. With any luck, I would find an underground river or a passage that led to the ocean, and from there I could plan my next move. I wasn't a huge fan of enclosed spaces, and though there was an angry mob after me up on the surface, I would rather take my chances against humans than a 30-foot-long snake. Torrance had said that monsters lived in the Underdark, and the many skeletons seemed to back up his claims. I swept my flashlight left and right as I ventured through the tunnel I had chosen. When it began to incline, my hope rose with it, but then it dipped downward at a steep angle, and I reconsidered my route. I would have to scoot down on my ass, but I would be able to climb back up easily enough if need be, so I continued down the tunnel. To my relief, the chute was only 20 feet long, and I soon came out onto a level path. Then I heard a woman's scream. Her voice sounded angrier than it did scared, and it came from my left. I shined my light around the small antechamber that I had dropped into and saw two possible routes. The chamber was devoid of glowing crystals, but another soft glow issued from the left tunnel, and it sounded like the woman's voice came from that direction as well. Animalistic grunts and growls answered the woman's cry with an enthusiastic chittering that made my skin crawl, and the gentleman in me saw red. "Let me go, you stinking kobolds!" the woman yelled as I approached the tunnel quickly but cautiously. My light revealed a short passageway that led to the source of the glow. I could see more crystals in the new chamber, so I put my flashlight away to save my precious batteries and crept to the chamber opening. As soon as I made it to the mouth of the cavern, I pressed my back against the right side of the damp tunnel wall and inspected the left side of the chamber. The woman's voice echoed in a way that left me unable to pinpoint her exact location, so I relied on my eyes and nose. That wet dog smell permeated the air, but I saw nothing among the stalagmites and crystals to my left, so I glanced to the right around the corner and saw shadows on the distant wall. The dark shapes moved quickly, so it was hard to see their form, but I thought I saw the silhouette of a woman fighting off small bipedal creatures. By the sounds they made, they might have been rabid raccoons. However, raccoons didn't talk, and these creatures did. It was a guttural language, but the closer I got, the more noticeable it became. The woman sounded like she was holding her own, but it was apparent by the sound of her voice that she was becoming tired. Then I saw the woman who was fighting off the group of monsters. The little beasts were no bigger than 3 feet tall, reptilian, and looked to weigh no more than 30 pounds. Their scaly skin ranged from rust brown to reddish black, but they all had red glowing eyes, snouts like a crocodile, vicious little teeth, long claws, and pointy ivory horns. Rat-like tails wagged as they bounded around the woman, who they had backed into a corner. "Get away from her!" I bellowed, and my voice echoed through the cavern. The group fell silent, and they turned their beady red eyes on me with surprise. Now that I was closer, I could see that they wore scant armor made of bones over their iguana-like skin, and some of them held little 2-foot-long spears fashioned with crude stone heads. Then they all peeled back rough lips to expose rows of tiny pointed teeth. I took a step forward and leveled my gun on the group, but they stared at the weapon with confusion. The woman they had been attacking sat in the corner beside a crystal, and its light made her skin look green. The woman stood about 5'10" and had long, somewhat wavy red hair tossed back to the left. Her eyes shone like brilliant emeralds as they looked up at me, filled with hope. She stood from her crouch and eyed the kobolds wearily. And that's when I realized that it wasn't the light. Her skin was indeed green, and she wore what can only be described as a moss bikini. Her body was tight, her muscles well-defined and firm. Her perky right breast tested the strength of her tight bikini top, but the other side of the top had been ripped and hung low.
A pointy nipple, surrounded by a dark green areola the size of a quarter, was revealed by the torn cloth, and the curve of the muscles below her hips suggested a tight, pert ass. She had the physique of a fitness model, and despite her green skin, I was instantly attracted to her. Our eyes met, and her gaze beckoned for me to help. I took another step forward, mindful to keep the gun on the little monsters, but distracted a bit by the beautiful green woman. One of the kobolds lunged forward and tossed a net at me, but I sidestepped it and blew the top half of the little freak's head off. The gunshot reverberated through the chamber like thunder, and everyone stopped to watch their comrade fall dead. I didn't want to waste a bunch of ammo, so I kept my gun trained on the group with a small hope that they might all run away. But the most heavily armored kobold walked over to their fallen brethren and gave the corpse a kick. The beast leaned in and put a finger into the cracked skull, then he held it up for everyone to see and said something in a language I didn't understand. The beast sounded like a Klingon with peanut butter in its mouth, but whatever he said must have been hilarious because the group started laughing hysterically. I fired again and blew off the Joker's head, and the laughter turned to hisses and growls of anger as the group of them turned back to me. They didn't look the slightest bit afraid of my handheld boomstick. The green woman used the distraction to her advantage and grabbed one of the kobold's clubs. She swung like Babe Ruth going for a home run, and the screaming beast sailed across the chamber. The kobolds let out a collective gasp, and then several of them growled and stabbed at her with their spears. The others rushed me as the green-skinned woman defended herself with her club, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to shoot them all. The little beasts leapt on my head and climbed up my body like demented toddlers. They piled onto my molly pack like ants trying to take down a beetle, and I pulled my knife and stabbed one kobold who had latched onto my face until he let go. Another strike took a kobold in the right eye as he leapt at me, and I twirled around to dislodge the little bastards on my back. One of them latched onto my boot, and I went down beneath a sea of thrashing scales. The green woman let out a primordial cry of fury, and I felt her added weight on top of me. We all rolled into the corner in a heap, and I scrambled to my feet as the woman helped kick them off my back. Then I hacked and slashed at the little monsters with my survival knife until their dying bodies gave us a bit of space. When I was clear, I reached around and grabbed my spade off my pack and batted aside one of the 30-pound terrors so hard that his head exploded and painted the far wall with dull green gore. I chopped at another kobold with the business end of the spade and cut clean through his neck. The head flew into the air in front of me, and I charged through the raining gore. I used the pickaxe attached to the side of the short spade to impale my victims as I passed. When I reached the far wall, three of the critters hung limp from the spike. "Die, die, die!" the green woman screamed, and her breasts bounced as she batted aside her assailants with her club. I tried to focus on the task at hand, but one of the kobolds latched onto her bikini bottom and tore it off to reveal her perfect, naked green ass. "Shit," I growled as I redoubled my efforts and tore into the horde again. My spade sliced necks and severed bony limbs. My knife eviscerated one who got too close, and he stared down curiously at his entrails as they spilled out of his bulbous little belly. Heads rolled, and dozens of mutilated kobold corpses soon littered the floor as I stood back to back with the ferocious woman. She swung her club wide and batted aside four furious kobolds. One of the beasts leapt over her backswing, but I caught it in midair with the edge of my spade and sliced it in half. I spun away from a spear thrust and buried my spade in the side of my attacker's head, then slashed the neck of a kobold flying at my face. The beautiful green woman batted away another kobold as it leapt through the air toward me, and I returned the favor by driving her closest attacker into the ground with my spade and squashing it like a June bug. Soon, there were only 10 kobolds left, and they smartly turned tail and ran for the nearest tunnel. I knew that we had won, but I still chased after them for 10 or so yards and growled like a bear until they disappeared into the dark tunnel. I put my hands on my knees and tried to catch my breath, and that's when I felt a soft hand on my shoulder. The green woman turned me around and planted a big kiss right on my lips, then she hugged me tight and pressed her pert breasts against my chest. I returned the hug and felt a bit surprised at how soft her skin was. It was at this moment that I noticed her ears were pointed like an elf's.
"My savior,"
she said and smiled up at me. I could have stared into those sparkling jade eyes of hers forever, and the warmth of her soft skin and her breasts pressed between us made my dick rock hard. I held her at arm's length so she wouldn't feel my little soldier's salute. "Are you all right?" I asked. We had both suffered minor injuries, scratches from the kobold's claws mostly, but nothing too serious.
"I'm fine, thanks to you,"
she said as she batted her eyes at me. The act would have looked cheesy coming from most women, but when she did it right. I pointed at her exposed breast. "Your top is ripped, and your,
"Oh,"
she said with a musical laugh as she looked down. I expected her to try to tie off the ripped portion to the part that hung from the back, and I almost offered to help, but then she surprised me by ripping the whole thing off and tossing it away. Then she grinned at me with her hip cocked to the side. This chick had more curves than a coastal California highway.
"What's your name, my human hero?"
Her voice was a little husky, but in a Scarlett Johansson kind of way. "Ken? Ken Jewel?" I said as I tried to keep my eyes fixed on hers. I failed, however, and my gaze gravitated to the smooth folds of her thin jade gait.
"Ken Jewel?"
She said my name as one word, and she said it as though she was naming her favorite chocolate. A grin slowly spread across her lovely face.
"I love jewels, so I love your name, Ken Jewel. Also, I think I love you."
A quick laugh escaped me, but when she frowned, I realized that she was actually being serious. "What's your name?" I asked.
"Nika Gekokara,"
she said, and her smile returned. "Can I call you Nika?" She seemed delighted by the name and clasped her hands as she bounced up and down.
"I love it, I love it,"
she cheered. I couldn't help but smile at her. She was cute as hell, and besides, bouncing breasts always had a way of making me grin. Nika rushed into my arms again and stared up at me with lustful eyes.
"Take me, Ken Jewel."
She grabbed my hand and pressed it against her bare breast.
"You have saved me from the vicious kobolds. As is goblin custom, we are now married, and we should consummate it immediately."
"Wait, did you just say goblin custom?"
"Of course, silly. Haven't you ever seen a goblin before?"
"Well, yeah. I mean, no, I've never met one. I've only seen pictures of what people think they look like. Aren't goblins supposed to be ugly?" She bowed her head, turned from me, and then shamefully crossed her arms over her bare chest.
"I am ugly," she said in a low voice. "That's why the other goblins hate me. While they have long, crooked noses, hunched backs, and fierce faces, my skin is smooth, my nose is tiny, and my back is straight. I ran away because they treat me like I'm some kind of freak."
"Nika, you're not ugly. You're beautiful." She sniffled and turned her doe-eyed gaze my way.
"You don't have to lie, Ken Jewel. I know how ugly I am.
Nika,
look at me."
She pouted and spread her arms.
"I don't even have warts."
"Neither do I," I told her as I showed her my hands. Then I pulled up the cuffs to show her some more of my skin. "My back isn't hunched, and I have smooth skin. Do you think I'm ugly?"
"Oh no, Ken Jewel. I think you are the most beautiful man I have ever seen. You are so big and strong, not short and fat like the other goblin men."
"Well, thank you. And I meant what I said as well. You are hands down the most beautiful goblin woman I have ever seen. Hell, you're hotter than any of the human women I know."
"Do you mean it, Ken Jewel?"
"You can call me Ken."
"No,"
she said matter-of-factly.
"I will call you Ken Jewel. The name is almost as beautiful as the man. After we have sex, I will be called Nika Gekokara Jewel. But you can still call me Nika, okay?"
"Wow, babe," I said and held up my hands. "Slow down. We just met, and you already want to get married?"
"We already are."
She glanced around at the mutilated kobold corpses, and her eyes lit up with a devilish glee. One hand moved to her breasts, and the other slid down her toned tummy.
Let us make love in the blood of our enemies, Kenjul. Take me here and now. Make me pregnant, and I will provide you with strong sons and daughters.
I didn't want to insult her, and I might have taken her up on her offer right then and there, but I preferred a bed to the stinking corpses of kobolds, so I tried to let her down softly. How about we get the hell out of this place before the kobolds come back? We can find somewhere to tend to our wounds and get you some new clothes. I have food, too. Does that sound good?
You are a tease, Kenjul, she said with a sly grin. Fine. We will find a better location to consummate our marriage.
I laughed again. She was too damned cute, and I was truly thankful to have run into her down here in this dark hellhole. Nika went about looting the corpses, and I grabbed the net that the kobold had thrown at me. It would come in handy as a booby trap of my own, so I attached it to my belt with my weapon cord and tied it off with a quick-release knot. "Any chance you know a way out of the Underdark?" I asked Nika.
"Of course, Kenjul. My tribe uses many routes through the Underdark to raid the surface world."
"Can you show me how to get to the closest one?" She nodded and pointed in the direction I had come from.
"Through the old basilisk den and past the waterfall is the quickest way out. Come on, I'll show you."
"Not that way," I told her. "I came in from there, and there are about 2 dozen humans waiting to chop my head off as soon as I poke it out."
"Oh no. What did you do? Did you raid their lands and pillage one of their towns? Humans hate it when you do that."
"It's a long story. Let's get the hell out of here first. Those kobolds could come back any minute now."
She grinned at me and kissed my cheek. "You worry too much, Kenjul. Come on, follow me."
Nika led me through the maze of underground passages. We traveled through caverns of pulsing crystals and mushrooms, down old dirty chutes and up steep ravines. When we came upon an underground lake, Nika bent at the shore and drank handfuls of water, but I eyed the lake warily. As far as I knew, anything could be lurking in those still waters. But Nika seemed not to worry about it, and I figured that she would know about the dangers that it might pose much better than I would.
"Drink with me, Kenjul. The water is pure and good," she said as she turned to offer me a delightful smile.
"I brought some from home," I told her, and then I drank from my camelback. After she was done drinking, Nika rose to her feet, wiped her mouth, glanced around the cavern, and then cocked a fine red eyebrow at me.
"Is this area suitable for sex?"
I choked on my water and chuckled between coughs. "We've only been traveling for 15 minutes. Damn, woman, you really want to get laid, don't you?"
"Oh yes, Kenjul. I have been saving myself for someone like you for so long, and I want you to be my first and only lover."
"You're a virgin?" I said.
"My father tried to find me a mate for a long time," she sighed. "But few of the men liked me because I am so ugly, and I didn't really like any of them because they were so dumb. That is why I left. It is dangerous in the Underdark, but I wanted to find a new home where others wouldn't mock or judge me because of the way I look."
"I see," I said as I tried to imagine how anyone, goblin or not, could think she wasn't absolutely amazing looking.
"But you came to save me," she proclaimed
as she raised her hands high above her head.
"And I see the way you look at me. You think I am pretty, I can tell. I can't wait to be your lover, Kenjul. Would you like to travel farther before bedding me, or are you teasing?"
"Yeah, let's go farther. A lot farther. Show me to this exit to the surface world and we'll, rest for a bit." She made a pouty face and walked with me around the lake. Another tunnel led off from the cavern, and it looked to have been dug out with pickaxes and shovels. "Who dug this tunnel?" I said as I ran my hand across the rough-hewn stone walls.
"Dwarves," she said.
"Of course dwarves," I said ironically.
"Yep, most of these tunnels were made by dwarves," Nika continued, oblivious to my sarcasm. "But my clan ran them out of here a long time ago. Now the kobolds are trying to encroach on our territory, but they're more of a nuisance than a real threat."
"Tell me more about your people. What is the goblin city like?"
"Oh, that's boring," she said. "I'd much rather hear about you."
"Well," I laughed, "I'd like to know why you think we are married.
Oh, Kenjul, she sighed. You are from such a strange place. Obviously, when you save a goblin, they are indebted to you for life. What better way for me to prove my gratitude than to be your wife, have wonderful sex with you, and make you a bunch of babies?
Well, I guess...
But I still want to know about you, she laughed. Tell me all about my new husband.
All right, what do you want to know? We traveled for another hour through the Underdark, and Nika asked me about 100 different questions. She was delighted to hear about Earth, and as I explained my hometown to her, I felt a pang of homesickness in my heart, even though I'd never felt much of one when I was deployed. I didn't know if I would ever see my parents or my siblings again, but at least I wasn't alone on this strange new world. What about you? I said as we hiked up a steep incline that led to a natural shelf full of mushrooms.
Well, I am not from a different world like you are, but I am an adventurer, she said with a smile. I kinda hated it in the Goblin City. Everyone is so stupid and mean, I couldn't take it anymore. Then I found you, Kenjul. Right when I thought that I was doomed, you came to my rescue. That must be why you were pulled through that portal. We are destined to be together.
Maybe, I said with a grin. I sure am glad I found you.
You are?
She asked with delight, showing plain on her beautiful face. Of course, I said, and I was rewarded by a giggling hug and a dozen kisses on my lips. Nika was a comfort in these dark tunnels, and I realized that I genuinely liked her. What I had told her was true. She was one of the most beautiful women I had ever met, and goblin or not, I found myself anticipating our next rest stop. I had fallen through a portal to a world with two suns and monsters lurking in the Underdark. Life had taken a surreal turn. So why not have hot sex with a gorgeous goblin woman? Things could have been a whole hell of a lot worse. An hour later, we came to a small chamber with a floor of velvety soft moss. Glowing green and white polka-dotted mushrooms grew on the smooth walls, and a single humming crystal protruded from the wall across from a small pool fed by a clear, flowing stream of water. The pool was 10 feet in diameter and glowed with shimmering light that suggested there was a crystal beneath the surface of the water. Steam rose from the pool, and I realized that it was a natural hot spring.
"Come and bathe with me," she said and dipped a toe in the pool. It's nice and hot.
Before I could tell her that I should check it for dangerous creatures, Nika slipped into the water and dunked her head under. When she came up, she seemed to do so in slow motion. She shook out her long red hair as her green breasts danced and bobbed merrily, and I watched, slack-jawed, as water dripped down her chiseled frame. It flowed between her cleavage, down her washboard abs, and disappeared at the bottom of her V-shaped torso as it met the surface. I'd seen plenty of beautiful women before, but Nika's exotic features were really doing it for me.
Don't be shy, Kenjul. Take off those dirty clothes and let me touch your beautiful body.
She bit her lip and touched herself in all the places that I wanted to explore. It took me about 10 seconds to tear my clothes off, and the green-skinned woman giggled when I almost tripped over my pant leg. When I peeled off my underwear and tossed them aside, Nika's eyes widened with delight, and she tantalizingly bit the tip of her finger.
Oh, Kenjul, you are so big and strong and hard.
I joined her in the pool and took her up in my arms. She laughed musically and kissed me with a burning passion. The warm water around us bubbled, and the steam lent to the dreamy encounter. Nika wrapped her arms and legs around me and slowly lowered herself onto my shaft. We both let out a moan of passion, and our tongues danced together as we slowly began to gyrate. Even though Nika said she was a virgin, she seemed to really, really, really know what she was doing. And it was one of the best sessions of sex that I'd ever experienced. A half hour later, I was laying on the soft moss floor trying to catch my breath. Nika was nestled up under my left arm with one leg draped over mine. We lay there in the afterglow of our lovemaking for an unknown amount of time, but nature's call finally roused me from her side, so I moved down the side of the tunnel and used the restroom. If I ever returned to Earth, no one was going to believe what had happened. Hell, I didn't even know if I believed it, but I didn't much care at all anymore. Having sex with a beautiful goblin in an underground hot spring sure beat the hell out of clearing ancient Syrian temples any day. A familiar sound found my ears as I was buckling up my pants. I listened closely and cursed when I heard the telltale sound of grumbling kobolds. Their little footfalls echoed down the tunnel that would lead them to us, but the tunnel was long and they sounded far enough away for us to get a head start on them. So I hurried back into the chamber and shook Nika awake. "Come on, we have to go. The kobolds have found us," I hissed. Nika came to sleepily. She stretched and yawned.
"Those little pests again? Damn it, I wanted to make love once more. I didn't even get a chance to kiss your..."
"I love the enthusiasm, babe, but we've got to go. Now!" I put my clothes back on and tossed Nika the camouflage t-shirt out of my waterproof bag. She was my woman now, and I didn't like the idea of someone else seeing her naked, especially not those devilish little kobold bastards. Nika led me back to the tunnel and we hung a right at the fork.
"This leads up to the surface world," she told me, but then stopped and faced me. "Is it night right now on the surface world? If not, I cannot go that way."
"I don't know how the days work here yet, but it doesn't matter. A witch read my stars and told me that I had the ability to bond with monsters. You're not a monster in my eyes, but it's what they call everyone who comes from the Underdark. Anyway, the witch told me that I could bond with monsters and bring them out into the sunlight, but I'm not sure how that works."
"You mean I could go out into the sun and not get burned?"
"Yeah, but I don't know how it works," I said with a shrug. "She said I can bond with..."
"It's the love," she interrupted me. "I love you, you love me, we are married and therefore bonded, so I can go into the sun."
Her eyes watered as she spoke, and I realized she was waiting for me to give her the confirmation that it was how the magic worked. I guess we can try it," I said.
"Oh, I love you, Kenjul," Nika said as she threw her arms around me. "You are the best thing that has ever happened to me."
"You're great too, Nika. Come on, let's get the hell out of here." We hurried down the long tunnel as it slowly inched upward. Not far behind us, the angry kobolds growled and hissed as they began to close the distance. Chapter 4. We ran for 10 minutes through the tunnel with the sounds of the angry kobolds hot on our heels. I didn't see the growling beasts whenever I glanced behind us, but they sounded close. Too close. Nika was in good shape, however, and she kept up a swift pace as we ducked through low caverns and sprinted through forests of glowing mushrooms. I had only just met Nika a few hours ago, but for some reason, I trusted her as much as I did the men in my unit. "How much further?" I asked as we clambered up a pile of loose stone, partially blocking off a tunnel.
"It's up ahead."
I watched her cute green ass wiggle over the heap of stone and followed her down the other side. There at the end of the tunnel, I saw our salvation glowing bright like only sunshine can. Then a crude spear hit the stone by my feet and clanked hollowly, and another whizzed by my head. "Run, Nika!" I shouted as I pushed her ahead of me. I didn't dare look back, I just ducked my head low and pumped my arms and legs as we both frantically charged toward the exit. A spear thudded against my molly pack, and I heard the hiss and shrieks of the kobolds mere feet behind me. My heart raced, and my worry for Nika grew. She had almost reached the exit, but the kobolds seemed to have found renewed strength and sounded as if they were just 20 feet behind me. Then they finally caught up to me, 10 feet from the exit, and leapt on my molly pack. I batted the little monsters away from me as they clawed at my face and tried to sink their sharp teeth into my neck, and then I growled and pumped my arms and legs. Up ahead, Nika stopped at the threshold, and she glanced back at me nervously. "Go, go, go," I urged. Nika stood there frozen by a lifetime of fear of the suns, but I was hauling ass through the tunnel, and when Nika stopped and turned around, I wrapped my arms around her and spun us both through the exit and out into the sunshine. As I had hoped, we landed on my molly pack and the kobolds who clung to it. The clawed hands of the little beasts that gripped my head made me blind to my surroundings, but we must have emerged at the top of a hill, because we rolled down it for a good 10 seconds before we came to a stop at the bottom. I felt the heat of fire on my face and neck and scrambled to get up and shake loose the screaming kobolds.
When I had gotten them off me, I turned around to discover four of the little bastards engulfed in flames and writhing in agony there on the hillside. Farther up, a couple more raced back toward the cave entrance, panic-stricken and shrieking, but they only made it a few feet before they, too, burst into flames. The stink of the charred